Hi, my name is Alice Goodbrook. I am an innovation lead at Innovate UK and I run the Energy Catalyst Programme. And my mission is to accelerate the innovation needed to end energy poverty.
Welcome to the Energy Catalyst Podcast, brought to you by ESI Africa, the trusted power and energy multimedia journal. In this series, we spotlight the companies delivering on ending energy poverty in Africa. You can download this and all other episodes on esi-africa.com/podcasts. Now, let's start today's conversation.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in for ESI Africa's podcast. My name is Nicolette Pomba-Fanzel, your host for today's discussion. Today, we will be talking about how a UK government-funded program is shaking up the market by helping startup companies deliver their innovations into sub-Saharan Africa and Asia. The program, Energy Catalyst, recently announced round 8 of its next wave of promising clean energy innovations that are addressing the energy trilemma, that being clean, affordable, and accessible energy, to transform the landscape while also addressing gender equality and social inclusion. Here to discuss this topic with me is Alice Goodbrook, Innovate UK's innovation lead. Welcome, Alice. Let's dive straight into the topic at hand. For those who are not familiar with Energy Catalyst, please give us a brief overview on its mission and the program's approach to ending energy poverty.
So Energy Catalyst's mission is to accelerate the innovation needed to end energy poverty. And we provide financial and advisory support to innovators across the world to create strategic partnerships, uncover insights, and develop different business models to ultimately improve the lives in Africa and Asia. The funding's kind of, it's like a program now. It used to just be a grant competition, but we've increased it to be a more kind of all-encompassing program to make sure that this innovation can happen. So it's kind of split into three parts. We have some collaboration building, we have a competition, and we also have business support. So the collaboration is all around trying to make these strategic partnerships between companies from across the world to try and connect challenge owners and kind of solution owners so they can get kind of the innovation where it's needed. The competition is the bit that everyone gets excited about. So it's when we say, oh, we've got £20 million. But actually it's just grant funding, it's an application. So you submit kind of your project idea into the competition. And then if you get funding, you also get the business support through the Energy Catalyst Accelerator Programme to make sure that you're commercially ready and your business is ready to sell as well as technologically ready.
That sounds absolutely amazing. And I love the fact that there's money involved and that innovation is going to reach the world stage that it needs to. So with this fascinating program, what in particular is Energy Catalyst looking for when searching for innovations for the fund? And I'm sure our listeners would like to hear what a winning innovation would look like.
So for us, it's like names on the tin, we're looking for innovation. So we're not looking for stuff that's off the set shelf. But in particular, we're looking for what we call risky innovation. So it's the technologies and business models that are kind of too early stage for conventional finance, such as an investment or a bank loan. Yet they have the potential that if they work, they can really change lives and become a market leader. So they to like have a winning innovation, it needs to be innovative. You know, please don't come to me with I'm going to get a solar panel from China and install it. And yeah, I'm not interested in that. What I am interested in is like a new business model to try and make sure that it works for the market it's kind of working in, because a good innovation really does need to understand its market. What's it going into? Why specifically there? And it also needs to have a clear view of actually what it needs to do in order to de-risk itself to get to market. So actually, what is the project that you're applying for going to do for you and your business to ultimately not need grant funding anymore and to get some private investment in so you can scale?
And it sounds like you've got a lot of experience in this market since we are now reaching round 8 of the program. So what are some of the highlights of this, the group of companies and the range of innovations that have been selected particularly for the African market. And what I really would like to know is whether there are any unique innovations not seen in other rounds.
Yeah, so we've been going since 2014-ish. It used to be back in the day, before I was around, I've only been around for the last 5 years, not quite that old yet. But when it started, it was actually a UK-focused programme. So we were looking at energy technology that was low cost, low carbon and secure. So what we call the energy trilemma. And the kind of focus of the competition is very much still low cost, low carbon, secure. Don't tend to talk about the trilemma so much. It's a bit of an old name now, but the principle of what we're looking for is the same. We've just changed it. So now it's solely looking at energy access requirements. So we're not looking at kind of exporting these into the UK. It's very much kind of how can we get this technology into Africa and Asia? And I think kind of like it was meant to be about one round a year. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. The joys of government funding on a five-year spending review means that sometimes it doesn't happen. But yeah, we are in round eight now, and round eight has funded 17 projects with a range of technologies from storage to solar to blockchains to grid resilience. Anything that's like, I guess, sustainable energy technology and is kind of looking at energy access, it's eligible in Energy Catalyst to fund. So we really do fund a broad range of kind of products. And while all the projects are kind of unique and all the technologies are unique, because we don't tend to fund the same thing twice, there has been a particular focus as we've moved on from away from kind of solar and solar technologies and much more to the storage and the resilience arm. So if you want me to give you a couple of examples.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So two of the projects that actually are both based in Nigeria, which is kind of not that unusual, which I might potentially talk about later. But ASON has got like a battery solar technology, and they're doing sodium ion batteries. And so they're trying to demonstrate what the next generation of sodium ion energy storage will look like and integrating in with solar energy generation. And this is to kind of lower the cost of getting energy access in Nigeria. So like 41% of Nigerian businesses generate their own power, and it costs, well, they've got the assumption that it costs about double grid-based power to mitigate the power cuts and the outages that they have. So when they need to basically increase the consumption of energy by 4 to 5 times, actually this is a massive prohibitor of getting energy in at the price point that they need. So sodium ion batteries have the potential to kind of replace kind of lead acid, and there's a big kind of movement from lead acid to lithium, but actually lithium has got its own environmental challenges. So sodium ion is one of these ones where actually it's a lot less toxic, it's lower cost, it's using abundant materials, it can be safely transported and stored in a fully discharged state, which lithium ion can't. So actually it has this massive potential of being, especially where there's not that the supply chains are limited. Yeah, at the moment, supply chains for storage limited in Africa has this big potential of being a lot lower cost than kind of the lithium alternatives. And on a kind of similar vein, like we've got another project called NEIO, and it's a UK company, and they're working in storage, they're working in batteries, but it's much more around industrial battery monitoring and management technologies. So what it does is it does early detection of battery issues, which reduces the system failure. So while batteries are known to be slightly temperamental occasionally, technology can increase the asset life by about 3 years. And it can be used across any kind of power system. So it can be grid connected, or it can be attached to like a mini grid or a solar home system. And it helps kind of residents and industrial users to know what's happening and to predict like outages and to make sure that diesel gensets, which are very obviously dirty and costly, don't have to be used so much for energy backup, because you can stop the problems before they happen.
Those are two very good examples, and I like the fact that both of them are looking at battery storage, because without the battery storage, not many people can actually motivate the mini grid market or the off-grid market that they are trying to grow, especially in Nigeria. So apart from the financial support that these companies are getting, what other support does Energy Catalyst bring to the selected innovations and the companies themselves? know there's a competition, you are now a winner, you get that financial support, but what happens thereafter?
So we've named it the Energy Catalyst Accelerator Program, or ECAP for short. Very catchy, we know. And this is much more around, well, the grant money is going to help you get what we call technology readiness level up. So it's kind of getting your technology ready for market. But there's also something called the commercial readiness level. And that's around how equipped your business is to act in a commercial manner, aka buy and sell what you need and enable to commercialize your tech. And that commercial readiness level is increased, or we try and increase it through the accelerator program by providing business support to every project that is successful in funding. When we kind of say business support, we mean anything from like market assessments to business plans to, do you want some help finding the right investor for you at the right stage? You know, do you need help pitch training, or do you need your investment pack looking at? All the way to, you know, hiring your first staff member. Some of our companies are really tiny. And so having to hire is quite a major, I guess, challenge for them, as well as setting up kind of companies in new territories. A lot of, you'll find, if you look at the portfolio of Energy Catalyst projects, a lot of them have, they've got technologies that might have worked somewhere else, but they're having to dramatically change the business model to work in a new territory. So it's how do you then set up business to be able to sell that in the new country you're working with? And on top of that, we also kind of get people to go to events. There's massive kind of speaking opportunities representing of Energy Catalyst across the globe.
I'm sure that you find that a lot of the founders of these innovative companies have the technical background, they understand what it is they want to build and bring to the market, but being a businessman or a businesswoman is a completely different thing. And the fact that you're helping them to bring their innovations to the market is absolutely fantastic.
One of the key kind of lessons that we find with companies actually is they kind of go, oh, what can I do? And it's kind of accepting the fact that actually as a business, you're, or as a one-person business, you're very good at one thing. You know, and that's normally developing technologies or business models, because that's what you've applied in and that's what you've been successful in. And there's nothing wrong with going, actually, the commercial side of it, I'm not so strong on, and bringing someone in. And that's a lot of that support that we give, is understanding your strengths in your business and then working out where your weaknesses are and filling those gaps to make sure that you're ready.
Right. So just on that point, how long does that support last for in terms of building the business up?
So it depends. So we have projects that run all the way from like 6 months to over 3 years. So generally it's the life of your project. We make sure that we try and offer support for each project for at least a year, but it can go up to 3 years if you've got a very long project going on.
I imagine that three years for a business like that seems like a very short time to have that support, but I'm sure they appreciate it very much. So let's talk about the eligibility in terms of criteria. Perhaps this may help future innovators who want to be part of the next round to understand what that criteria is.
Yes, so hopefully chatting about this has piqued all your interests in applying to a future round. So I guess it's important to know, though it's one competition, so it's Energy Catalyst, it'd be like round 8, or the next one we'll hopefully call round 9. We're very keen on keeping things simple. It's run as 3 strands. There's like an early strand, a mid strand, and a late strand. This basically is there so we can support technologies all the way out from kind of just out of university all the way to pre-commercial demonstration. So feasibility study is, we've created a material in the university and we want to see if it's feasible to, say, work in a battery. That's your feasibility study. And that's about a £50,000 to £300,000 cost, 6 to 12 months. And if you're an SME, you can apply on your own, but otherwise it's got to be a collaborative program. And it can be led by, say, a small company or an academic or an RTO. And so kind of because it's straight out of university, the research participation, you can have quite a high level. But when you're getting to mid stage, that's much more kind of piloting. So you know the material works, let's create a pilot or a prototype to kind of see how that works in practice. And we call this kind of industrial research. It's about up to £1.5 million we can give out in costs for this. And the projects last between 12 and 24 months. And while at early stage, you don't have to be collaborative, by mid stage, we're like, yeah, you've got to work with other people, because we believe that actually working collaboratively with different businesses and organizations ultimately makes your innovation stronger. And it has to be led by business, and there's less research involvement in these, mainly because the further you get away from, I guess, the early TRLs or the technology readiness levels, the further away from academia and closer to market should be. So the less academic involvement you should need. Doesn't always kind of stand true, but generally that's the rule. By this stage, we require you to work with at least an international partner that's looking at an eligible country. So we have a list of countries which we say we're looking for energy access projects in, and you have to work with a company from one of those eligible countries. Mm-hmm. Late stage, by that time, we're talking like £5 million projects. They're huge. It's all about pre-commercial demonstration. So you've got your prototype, you've got your pilot. Let's do a small scale kind of demonstration to see if you can get your business model and to see what the operation and maintenance costs are. It's up to 3 years. It has to be collaborative. You have to work with in-country partners. Again, the research participation rate's lower, so it's got to be led by a business. But it is about kind of doing those final checks in order to work out how you're going to scale to market.
You've touched on a bit here around the selection process and how it would span for an innovative company. So once the application has gone through this whole process, one thing I would like to know is there a percentage of companies that drop off, and why would they drop off?
Yeah, so basically all our funding is match funding. So we'll give you a grant, you'll apply for, say, £1 million of money for costs, and we'll give you normally like about 70% of that. So we'll give you 700,000, you have to match fund it for the 300,000 to get it up to the total cost amount. So there's quite a lot of financial due diligence that we put companies through to make sure that, one, you've got the ability to be able to get that funding and that you've got the cash flow in order to run your project. So everything's paid everything's paid every 3 months in arrears, basically. And that's when quite a lot of the projects start to drop off. So we get, I think, probably 10% of the ones that we approve for funding don't make it to actually starting. And that's absolutely fine. This is the thing. When you're funding risk innovation, sometimes they think they're getting investment in and they don't. And that is okay. That is what we're funding. We understand that. So some of them drop off then. Others, like the collaboration partnerships break down. You know, it takes about from submitting your application to starting, it's normally about a 5 to 6 month process. Sometimes those collaborations don't last and something happens and priorities change within businesses. Again, that's absolutely fine. Mm. And sometimes people have just gone, no, it's no longer a priority, and that's completely okay too.
Do you ever find that they reach the prototype stage and the prototype just doesn't work?
Yes. And people don't always believe me when I say this, but I kind of want some of the projects to fail. Not like I'm wishing bad on any of you, never. But actually, you know, if you look at the fundamentals of what we're doing, we're funding risky innovation. If everything works, I haven't funded anything risky because it's never going to work like that. So we're expecting projects to fail. Not all of them, then we know we've gone a step too far, but it's a completely and utterly valid project when someone goes, we tried it and it didn't work. Brilliant. Okay, now you know to stop that and either go back and sort the problems or actually move on to something else.
Right. That's good to know. So one of the criteria for selecting winning innovations is how well they factor gender equality and social inclusion. Why is this important, and what are some of the ways innovations ensure they are inclusive?
Gender equality and social inclusion, the topic that people always forget when creating a new technology or business model. If you look at it at the basic level, if you're creating a new tech, you need to make it applicable for every single person in society. If you're only looking at a certain, you know, for example, males, you're cutting out 50% of your potential market for that product. So there's a basic business kind of, requirement for you to look at it. But actually, above and beyond that, it's you need to understand the cultural environments and the society that you're trying to sell into, because you know, things do differ and you need to understand the different cultural norms. Like selling something in Rwanda is going to be different to selling something in Kenya or selling something in Asia or selling something in the UK. And to understand the kind of different JESI, what we call it, is JESI requirements, make sure that it is fit for purpose. And also, you know, we are looking at kind of levelling up the leave no one behind kind of agenda. And when you're setting up businesses and you're setting up supply chains, you want to make sure that everyone has the right to access those. You know, jobs are important, and we want to make sure that women have access to jobs. We want to make sure that the young and old have access to jobs, and both the able and disabled communities. And so to thinking of that and designing that in from an early stage becomes imperative to make sure that you haven't got to the end and realised that actually it just doesn't work, or is not fit for the communities that you're trying to work with. And you know, I guess one of the best examples I think we've got in the programme is Mobile Power, actually. And they basically have battery packs. There is lots of batteries, I've realised I talked about today. But battery packs in Sierra Leone, and they rent them out. And so they'll race up and down on a little moped to different villages, swapping in and out, and they pay a service charge. But quite a lot of that business model is based on sales and selling people that service. What they found is that actually in Sierra Leone, women look after the household, they look after the energy use within the household. So actually female sales agents are the most kind of crucial thing for your business. It was only because they were trying to understand the gender equality and social inclusion aspects of the market they were looking at, did they realise that? And actually, if you look at how their business has gone, it's from strength to strength. And they found that as they expand across different countries in Africa, there's kind of a similar story is happening. And they're making sure that, you know, they take into account each requirements in each country they go to make sure they're a success.
That is so important. And as you say, market research on the ground with local communities and understanding what the differences are. If you do want your innovation to go from, for instance, a country in East Africa to a country in West Africa. So now that you're in the eighth round of EPAC, how have the major changes in technologies been seen? Have you seen innovations that have been supported over the years staying solid, or are there new things coming to the fore?
So traditionally, early on, we did a lot of solar home systems and a lot of solar systems. And that's petered off slightly, mainly because they're in the market. There's some improvements that people are doing, but actually, you know, they're quite established and it's a known thing. So we started seeing quite a lot of bioenergy projects and kind of how, and the fundamentals of what the chemistry was and making the technology work. And now actually we're seeing that kind of technology move into the mini grid space to look at mini grids and creating them 24 hours. So unless you have a large amount of storage or you have some kind of base load for mini grid, normally you're getting electricity in the day if it's solar based. Actually bringing that bioenergy kind of aspect into it is allowing people to run it for 24 hours. And as I kind of mentioned previously, because all my examples I've realized are storage today, there's a much bigger focus on storage and that reliability aspect to kind of get this 24 hour better tier of service in terms of energy access.
Have you seen any, for instance, micro wind energy projects or hydropower, pump storage, runoff river, anything like that?
So we have quite a few hydro projects. I mean, hydro is one of the oldest energy generating technologies around. But so the switch is much more around like run of the river and small and very easily kind of maintained hydro. And that's quite an important, especially for, you know, going back to the JESI question, like making sure that communities can service their own technology. So a lot of the innovation for hydro is much more around kind of the service model and making them simpler rather than more complicated. And we've got kind of, lots of other kind of, with wind, there are some onshore wind. A lot of the companies that apply into Energy Catalyst are UK based. Not all of them, it's open to anyone in the world. But the UK onshore wind sector isn't brilliant at the moment. We don't really do much of it. So a lot of it's been focused on offshore. So we've got more offshore wind projects than we do onshore. And it's about trying to make those work on a small enough capacity for like kind of islands in Asia and things like that.
So you've been with the program now for a couple of years, as you mentioned at the start of our conversation. What are some of the lessons you've learned along the way in terms of supporting and the development of innovations for energy access and bringing them to market? And in particular, what are the main challenges and risks in the commercialization of proven technologies?
Kind of the main lesson at the moment is when we're, so the gender equality and social inclusion kind of side of things, it's become, you know, we've always looked at it, but it's become such more of a focus of what we're trying to get our companies to understand. And actually, there's another thing that we're all right at gender equality. People get it. People get that both men and women should have access. Social inclusion is a lot less understood, and trying to understand how we can help companies tackle that when actually there's not much research on how to do social inclusion. There's not that many kind of organizations helping people do social inclusion. It's much more focused on gender. So we have, yeah, one of the lessons kind of I've been learning is how we need to bring that in, because it's not done well at the moment in the industry, and struggling to do it. But yeah, it's always a good challenge to have. In terms of risks that kind of innovative companies have, I mean, there's always a technology risk, like, is it going to work? Are you commercializing it? You know, it's simple, get the thing right. There's also the massive business risk of, okay, you've got your technology to work. But then there's almost like a second tranche of innovation that you have to do around the business model to make that, to sell it. Especially when you're looking at, you know, some of the bottom of the pyramid energy access markets on $1, you know, $2 a day, it's a very different price point to what they may have previously been working at. Making that kind of, looking at those business models to see how they can get it to work is really important. And then kind of the ones that we've got quite a few projects in South Africa, which obviously have got their grid access is huge, but there are some unserved communities. But actually, there's been this really big political risk that we've had where, you know, we've had projects work there and then suddenly they're grid connected because they hear that there's going to be this project to do off grid work. So there's always that risk that the where you're demonstrating and trialing isn't going to work for over a year because actually the political landscape has changed.
Right.
And I guess the final major risk is around kind of investment and first customers. You know, getting that first investor is crucial for your company. And people, you know, there is lots of investors around doing lots of investment in clean energy, but generally people kind of want to be the second adopter, not the first person to give the money over. So finding ways around that is kind of critical to make sure that your business is a success.
So talking about financing, have there been any changes in financing this landscape for innovations and technologies in the renewable energy sector?
It's interesting how, especially kind of post COP26, that kind of the Sustainable Development Goal 7, which is energy access, and Sustainable Development Goal 13, climate change, or climate action, I think it's officially called, have come together. And I think there's always been an acceptance that you need clean energy to be able to do energy access. But actually around renewables, kind of, especially in this sector, focusing on kind of climate mitigation and this acceptance that it's a global, you know, sorting out your own emissions for a country is not going to solve climate change. It's not going to solve global warming. And that if you look at it in isolation, we're not going to hit 1.5 and it's not going to go well. So this kind of global cooperation that's starting to move, that's combining kind of the two primary goals. And that's directly reflected in kind of the financing available and looking at kind of those dual requirements. And also like the investment that's coming through, like people are looking, everything is kind of based with a climate focus now, which I think is really, really encouraging and exciting for kind of the market, especially as we kind of, you know, it's one of the biggest challenges we're ever going to have. How do we solve it? You know, and I think the industry is finally waking up to kind of actually the size of the challenge and what they've got to do to be able to make it work.
There is something I want to ask you, just to looking at it from an innovator's point of view, when they approach you initially, do they need to prepare themselves for almost like a Dragon's Den type of pitch, or is it a nice, easy, conversation that they're going to have with Energy Catalyst?
I hope we're not that scary as a Dragon's Den pitch. So obviously, like, actually, if you're just applying into Energy Catalyst, it's just an application form. If you want to chat to us about your technology, we're a friendly bunch. It's very much kind of what we're interested in understanding is, what do you need? Like, where are you? Where do you want to get to? And what is the actual challenge that you've got in order to commercialize? You know, grant funding, you have to provide some private investment so that it's not the easy win that it could be. So actually, if you just need to hire someone who's a bit more commercially savvy than some of the more innovation minded folks, that is much quicker and cheaper to do that than try and apply for a grant. So that's what we're interested in. We're interested in chat, finding out what you're after, what you need. And also, we're nosy. We love hearing about what people are doing and, you know, what those opportunities are for that technology you're developing.
All right. So Alice, from everything that you've shared with us today, I see that Energy Catalyst is a much needed way to mobilize innovation in the sector. So what are the future plans for the program? And will it be permanent features in the renewable energy sector?
I hope so. So we're hoping we're getting more funding in. The platform, also, we're funded by lots of different UK government organisations, but the main one is the Foreign Commonwealth Development Office, and through a programme called the Transforming Energy Access Platform. And they've just been given, I think it was announced at COP actually, have given, I think, 126 million. And we're hoping some of that will filter down to the Energy Catalyst programme. We're hoping to run some new funding rounds kind of this year and create an opportunity for more exciting projects to come into the Energy Catalyst family.
Right. So in closing, Alice, since inception of Energy Catalyst, which countries have stood out for you as being early adopters of products and services that are on offer from these innovators? Well, what do you believe are the reasons behind these countries standing out?
So Nigeria and Kenya are the ones that seem to be the most keen and the quickest to adopt things. And I think it's a mixture of, actually, for the kind of innovation kind of companies that we're working with, business readiness levels in those countries are just higher, so it's easy to do business. The policies around kind of getting export and things like that are much easier to work in. And they're a bit of a known. Once there's quite a few innovative companies working there, you know, the sharing of knowledge and actually this is how you do it, this is how you set up a company, this is how you go, this is the supply chains you need. It spreads. But yeah, those are the two main ones that are kind of, we always say trial them there and then try to export from that point of view. So, you know, if you can make it work in Kenya and Nigeria, you're doing well, and you've got the potential then to distribute it across the rest of Africa.
That's very good to know, both sides of the African continent. Alice, thank you for spending time with us today. We have reached the end of our podcast session. It has been enjoyable chatting with you and learning about this platform that is making it possible to end energy poverty. I'd like to thank our listeners for tuning in for this podcast. Until the next episode, do take care and stay safe. Bye for now.
You have been listening to an ESI Africa podcast. For the latest news, reports, and interviews on power, energy, and related industries, visit the ESI Africa website on esi-africa.com or follow us on social media. Until next time, thank you for tuning in.